go ahead.
Okay, so that was the second milestone, and I think then the development of new technology. We talked about it at lunch, particularly systems technology. So that the development of systems ecology then might be considered the third big event, which has changed the way we think about
that. Okay, and that was furthered by what?
Computer technology. Also, all kinds of analytical technology. Like I mentioned, traces. Traces to which we pioneered some of that at Savannah River Verde and at San Pablo. Also, increasing instrumentation, all sorts of photoelectric type things, and all sorts of things that you can flame from photometers, things where you put your material in, you burn it, you measure the colorimeter technology, we call it, in broad sense. The newer instruments can detect stable isotopes. For instance, there's not any good radioactive nitrogen isotope, but there's a couple of lovely little stable isotopes, and we can now have instrumentation to see that can detect nitrogen or carbon 14 and carbon 13 and things of that sort. So that the instrumentation and in many cases biochemistry things have made a big difference. Because we can now measure things that you can. So the instrumentation technology, we'll just say in general, has made a big difference. And that's the last 15 or 20 years. So that's three different changes. Now, we may be getting, I don't know from the looks of things, we may be getting a second environmental awareness movement, which may stick longer. The first one faded pretty fast as people lost interest in that and became concerned about evil kingdoms. We spend our money on the military and the concern about economics, jobs, things of that sort, put the environmental movement on the back burner for quite a while. A lot went on there and some small changes. But right now we're seeing some watershed changes. Like I just mentioned, the Commerce Department being said we must consider environmental costs and benefits. This administration, all sorts of little things are occurring that people don't notice, maybe. The best thing maybe come out of the Clinton administration won't be Clinton at all. Maybe very unpopular, may not last much longer. But there's an awful lot of things that happen because people are aware and want it to happen. And we ought to get over the idea that the president can do anything anyway. He can establish a leadership set point, which is very important. So I would say that we may be getting now into the political watershed where environment is important in politics, where it has been. This might be the green movement, if some people call it.
It's in Germany.
They have green parties in some place, Sweden, Germany, and so on. It'll be a long time before we'll have one here, but the greening of the economics is occurring in small steps, so eventually you will get to that point. Those, I think, are the big watershed changes.
Okay. How has our understanding of nature and ecology itself changed during your lifetime as a science?
Yeah. Well, simply the development of the ecosystem concept is so important there, because before that, nature was considered a series of unrelated things, Thousands of people study plants and interested in botany, and thousands of people bird watch, thousands of people do things in nature, and thousands and millions go to national parks, and so on. So that the interest in nature is perhaps, feeling that nature is important, is perhaps something that's in the philosophy and in every religion, in a way, and in every people. Feeling that you're part of nature, but for a while there, you see technology separated man and nature. So I would say what we have now is a realization that man and nature, as it were, must be as a whole, not as separate. Mm-hmm. Because the human mindset in general is to control nature, dominion. The Bible says go out and take charge of nature and reproduce. That's mm-hmm. early. But we point out, if you read on in the Bible, it says, yes, that's true, but you must also take care of everything. So stewardship is not a new idea. It's in the Bible quite a bit. And so we say it's now time to think more about stewardship. We don't need to promote dominionship, because we've already got to control everything. Control. Mm-hmm. And so on. So I think that's the big shift. That early societies consider man and nature as a whole. Early societies depended on local resources, so they were careful not to destroy them. Mm-hmm. They understood the importance of local resources. When you build big cities and all, you no longer know where the resources come from, and so on. So that now we have a return to man and nature as a whole, the land ethic, if you wish, of Leopold. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we're going down, is to realize that we have, that's why we have to get natural capital and natural goods and services into the economic system. That'll be resisted, as always, for a long time, because sometimes it's an individual's interest to exploit nature, of course. Make a lot of money if you can do that. And so that's impinging on individual right to do what he wants to with his land. See, the land, the taking issue becomes a legal, difficult issue for people. So how do we preserve the life support? And then putting things on life support, you see, is what I do now with my present books, the little books which I keep up to date. The big books are out of date. We're considering, my brother and I are considering maybe revising the fundamentals, with him being the main author, because after three editions, I thought it would die. It hasn't died, you see. Mm-hmm. And so we make, because we would put this subtitle, Fundamentals of Ecology, the Systems Approach, and then my other book, which is called Basic Ecology, where Basic Ecology, the Human Ecology Approach. Mm-hmm. So what we have too, what we have here now, is two main directions that ecology is going into. One is a human ecology, where we're looking at how and what we learn from nature, and how we can deal with humans as major components of systems. Whereas the old-fashioned ecology is to go far away from people as possible. Illinois, you went out in the wilderness somewhere if you could find one. You tried to find a virgin prairie or something to study. Mm-hmm. In those days in Illinois, you could find a virgin prairie in some of the cemeteries. That's the only place you could find it. Nobody farmed to dig that up. Yeah. So we'd have little patches of old-fashioned prairie in the middle of the cemetery. Okay, so now we study landscapes which have humans in them. You can't find a landscape that have human influence in them, mm-hmm. even Antarctic. And then we evolve, and we have new technologies, the GIS technology that you were just mentioning is a new technology that's revolutionizing and making an interface between geography and ecology, which has always been a natural one, but very few universities do that. Early students, I said, let's have a mind in geography and geology. Most ecologists don't have enough earth sciences. They take up teen amounts of organic chemistry, which is of no real value because it's mostly industrial and medical stuff.
Yeah.
You probably had all those. One course has probably been enough. And you may not even have it as your kind of course in geochemistry. But that's more important to ecologists than biochemistry. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were deficient in ecology and not having enough earth science, which is a good part of it. and then things like hydrology and meteorology and things of that sort. So we're having more and more success in interfacing with those kinds of sciences. And we have got to get to interface with social science. In my father's day, there was much better, because his book, Southern Regions, was really an interface study of culture and environment, mm-hmm. trying to answer the question, why is the South doing so poorly? And that study had a tremendous influence in waking up people as to what our real problems were. Lack of quality industry, carpet bag industry, segregation, of course, was hurting everything, and lack of lousy farming, crook cash crops only, you know, let the land lay fallow. Mm-hmm. World's worst farming, I guess. So we lost a ton. So all those bad things. Now we've recovered on some of that. The South is not any worse off than other. Now we have a set of new problems. You mm-hmm. see, and these now are increasingly ecological. The pollution problems and the demographic problems. We used to worry and wring our hands about the brain drain. Leaving the South to go someplace else, or as I have to do to go to get a PhD. You couldn't stay in the South. There weren't any PhDs to mount mm-hmm. everything, except maybe in Civil War history or something like that. This university had a few higher degrees in history and literature, and that's it, not in science. Okay, so that I think that covers that.
Yeah. Okay. What major areas has your research focused on?
People have a hard time pinning me down because they say, what is your, if you have to put out on a form, you know, what is your specialty? Mm-hmm. You see? I'm a specialist in generality, you might say. Mm-hmm. And what I've done really is to go from one sort of focus to another. Vertebrate ecology, we'll say, was my first focus. When I first came here, that was my interest. And I did a whole lot of field work looking at mammals, birds, mammal, terrestrial animals, you know, finding new species and looking at the total comparative vertebrate ecology, we call it, because the state has this nice contrast between the temperate north and the tropical south. And then from there we went to the radiation ecology, so we pioneered that. That's Oak Ridge, pretty well pioneered radiation ecology, which is not an interface where we learn from the physicists about radiation and physical things, and they learn from us about biological things. Mm-hmm. And so the interface enriches both subjects, and then you have the emergent property coming out, that you have something that emerges out of that. And using atomic tracers, you see, those words out of that. Then, like all things, you get begin to get that becomes part of both fields. So there's no longer a need to emphasize interfaces now. People are educated now enough not to need to focus on them. Mm-hmm. Someday we won't need ecology, economics interface, because it'll be part of economics. Mm-hmm. Do that. So the interface is necessary to get people to move out of their straitjackets. So that, going back, I would consider that interfacing might be in the long run my best accomplishment, is developing interfaces between disciplines that relate important to the environment, you might state it that way. So then I had 10 years of that, you see. We had lots of students, doctoral theses, and so on. And then from there I went to wetland ecology, which started in San Paulo. So wetland ecology was another. So, you know, I can be listed myself as an expert in wetland ecology, expert in radiation ecology, expert in ornithology. People say, my God, you know, what are you? And then, of course, all of that can be summarized is that I'm an ecosystem ecologist. That's my specialty. But within that, I've had a whole bunch of... And look at my reprints. I have a stack of reprints in that area, a stack of wetland reprints. reprints like that, and the spike of radiation ecology reprints like that, you see. And lately, you see a whole stack of interface reprints, mm-hmm. and so on. So we go from interface to interface, I guess we'll say, trying to find new things between disciplines rather than stick to one discipline. Mm-hmm.
Constantly
so,
moving.
So I have no discipline. I'm not discipline-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So I do not have a traditional discipline, except ecology. If I put down on a form, what are you? I just say ecology.